Part 4. Lead. Chapter 15. Leaders of the Future. New Skills for a New World. When I started out with what was to become Virgin more than 4 decades ago, I wanted to make people's lives better. I know this can very easily sound like a load of unmitigated self-serving twaddle, but it's true. I felt then, and still do today, that business, every business, has enormous potential to be a force for good in the world. Companies can realize this potential by looking for ways to do things differently, and by putting our people and the planet right up there alongside growth and profit as our raison d'etre. And the amazing thing is that, contrary to popular perception, these are not opposing poles, but are mutually reinforcing opportunities. Business doesn't have to be a zero-sum game where some win and others lose. When done properly, everybody stands to gain. Companies, communities, and the beautiful planet on which we are privileged to live. To achieve lasting progress, we must identify, nurture, and learn from the next generation of business leaders. Some of these rising stars are already ahead of the curve, especially in the way they weave together their social and entrepreneurial passions, and I wish all of us in business could wise up to this fact and start doing more to encourage and support them. Businesses have a major role to play in tackling the world's toughest challenges, so to my mind, it makes perfect sense to tap into the energy of the legions of up-and-coming young business leaders who are not afraid to start companies, challenge the status quo, and see how their products and services can make a difference in the world. Training for success. That's what we had in mind when Virgin Unite was instrumental in opening the Branson Centers of Entrepreneurship in Johannesburg, South Africa, and Montego Bay, Jamaica, a few years back. And thank goodness we did. Now, hundreds of entrepreneurs later, we can point to countless success stories about startups that have given hope where there was none, created jobs, stimulated local economic growth, and reduced poverty. Take, for instance, the story of Claire Reed, one of the budding entrepreneurs supported by the center in Johannesburg. Her business, Real Gardening, produces a patented pre-fertilized biodegradable seed strip that makes growing food in a garden setting simple, easy, and extremely productive. By reducing water wastage by 80% in the germination phase, Real Gardening is forging to the forefront of the fight against food insecurity in Africa. Since attending the Branson Center, Claire, who lives by the perhaps cliched but still apt motto of "better to teach a man to fish than give a man a fish," has created numerous jobs for previously unemployed single mothers in the production of the seed tape. She has also provided training at some 150 school and community gardens, thus enabling countless others to take control of their food security and employment. Over in the West Indies, another Jamaican Branson Center alumna, Robin Fox, has developed 3 distinct but closely interwoven businesses: the Mount Edge Guest House, the Europe in the Summer, or EITS, as in Eats Cafe, offering European and Jamaican flair using the farm-to-table concept, and Food Basket Farm, a weekly delivery service for fresh, locally grown, pesticide-free produce. Robin now has a steady stream of customers throughout the year and has identified opportunities to expand her operations further afield, as well as how to educate others in the community about farming methods, hospitality, and tourism. As Robin tells it, "Among so many other things during my time at the Branson Center, I was introduced to the opportunities that are to be found in harnessing the power of the local community. We hire only locals in the businesses, we grow almost all our food locally, and we embrace the community at every turn, whether it's fish fries with our guests or local Rasta drummers playing for them. It adds so much more satisfaction knowing that we are not just running a healthy business, but that its impact on the community has been nothing but positive. Student entrepreneurs. Claire and Robin's stories are all the more encouraging considering the similar socio-economic challenges that South Africa and Jamaica both face. Looking at the bigger picture, however, they are merely a drop in the bucket. So why not work to take entrepreneurship and leadership to a whole new level? Let's start in our schools. Having dropped out of school at 16, I've always felt that the UK's education system never really caught on to the idea that entrepreneurship can and should be nurtured at an early age. This may have improved slightly over the years, but it certainly still has a very long way to go. Today's teenagers are tomorrow's leaders, and with very few exceptions, they are bursting with natural inquisitiveness, drive and spirit that schools need to learn to harness and channel rather than tame. Our educational systems need to give young people the opportunity to plug into curriculums that encourage them to rise to their full potential, take risks, embrace failure, and challenge the established norms wherever and whenever they can. The leaders of tomorrow will be so much more effective if they are taught to retain and refine that childlike curiosity for the unknown, rather than having it schooled out of them, as seems still to be the case today in so many schools and universities. Secondary education should be encouraged to place greater emphasis on developing emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and real-life problem-solving skills. Algebra and calculus don't cut it, all of which are key traits of successful entrepreneurs and indeed successful adults in any walk of life. One of the problems facing any such classroom revolution is that school teachers tend to teach the things they themselves were taught in school, and entrepreneurship was almost certainly not one of them. In fact, when I went to school, the only job teachers ever talked about was teaching, presumably because that was all they had ever wanted to do. They, too, however, were likely victims of the same phenomenon at the hands of their own teachers. Career guidance counselling was not that big back then. So, how exactly can entrepreneurship be wedged into school curriculums? For one, we should encourage schools to bring in entrepreneurs of all ages to talk to pupils about their own personal journeys. There is no greater inspiration than hearing about someone's first-hand experiences, warts and all. Not just the glowing tales of how I made it big, but all of the seemingly insurmountable challenges, near misses and failures, which are every bit as valuable as the success stories. We should also support more small business challenges and competitions in schools and universities. Wonderful models exist for such things in programs such as Young Enterprise in the UK and Junior Achievement, JA, in the USA. Young Enterprise and Virgin Money have collaborated on a wonderful competition aimed at primary school children, ages 5 to 11, called The Fiver Challenge. Participating children or groups are pledged £5 to set up a mini business and have 30 days to make as much profit as they can while engaging with their local communities. At the end of the month, each group's earnings are tallied up, pledges repaid, and the kids decide how they want to use any profits. Maybe a day out, books for school, or a donation to their favorite charity. The choice is entirely theirs. The purpose of the challenge, however, is not about the winnings so much as introducing young minds to the concepts of risk-taking, team-working, problem-solving, And in short, that money is not just for spending. In the US, not-for-profit JA distributes a classroom-based teaching module entitled Be Entrepreneurial. The 7-part program introduces students to the essential elements of such things as writing a practical business plan, and then challenges them to start an entrepreneurial venture while still in school. As per their website, JA students learn about advertising, business plans, competitive advantages, customer demographics, entrepreneurial spirit, ethical dilemma, ethics, financing, franchising, long versus short-term consequences, market needs, marketing, non-profit businesses, stakeholders, product development, profit, social entrepreneurship, social responsibility, and of course roll all these together, and they are essentially learning how to become well-rounded leaders. I don't think any one of those words or phrases ever crossed the lips of one of my teachers when I was in school. Okay, that was then, you say, but the real problem is that I don't believe they are terribly common in today's schools either. Certainly not before university level. But we shouldn't fall into the trap of blaming everything on the schools. One way or the other, we could all do a better job of promoting activities outside of the classroom that support the entrepreneurial experience. It is certainly encouraging to learn that at last count, 150 countries now celebrate Global Entrepreneurship Week, and that more and more business schools are offering courses on how to become an entrepreneur. Consider my own story. When I was in school, my friends and I saw a need for young people to have their own voice on the bigger issues of the day. So we started a magazine for students, aptly titled Student. We were attempting to change the world and run a business all at the same time. As you will have read, we made all kinds of mistakes, big and small, along the way, and although we didn't always realize it at the time, these inevitably turned into valuable learning experiences. But the factor that most contributed to our early success was the support we got from our families and friends. At the time, our schools didn't even pretend to understand what we were up to. Student soon led to other, bigger endeavors that benefited greatly from the life lessons that we gleaned from this first entrepreneurial venture. And I have often thought how much less daunting the experience might have been had we had the support of the school system and local businesses. Having access to a study course like the above Junior Achievement Program might have made all the difference in the world. I say might rather than would, only because, given my teenage disaffection with just about anything taught in a classroom, the chances are I might just have decided that this entrepreneurship thing was not for me. We will never know. A pioneering tale. Several Virgin companies have been making concerted efforts to support burgeoning entrepreneurs. For example, working closely with Virgin Unite, Virgin Media decided it had all the tools to offer meaningful online assistance, and so in 2010 launched virginmediapioneers.com. This has spawned an incredible online community of enterprising young people using videos and blogging to help young entrepreneurs share their ideas and experiences. The Pioneers program also has real live people there for participants to talk to, network with, collaborate with, and get tips from. The online video channel Pioneers TV brings it all to life with Pioneers spotlights and behind-the-scenes insights into all kind of industries. In the real world, there are also free events for training and face-to-face networking, as well as contests and competitions that will help entrepreneurs get experience and build their profiles. I have been thrilled to take part in several events where I've had the opportunity to sit down with some of our pioneers and let them pitch their projects and discuss their hopes, aspirations, and fears. One of the more amazing tales of success that we use to inspire Virgin Media pioneers is that of Londoner Jamal Edwards, who now frequently attends VMP events to share his experiences. His story began when, at age 15, his mother gave him a digital video camera for Christmas. He started filming clips of his friends rapping and posting them on the newly emergent YouTube. When people started to follow Jamal, he next started poaching interviews with rap artists outside clubs and adding them to his YouTube content. Seeing the niche he was filling, at 16, he launched his YouTube-hosted SB.TV online music channel. Jamal was on his way. Now, at just 22, his millions of followers have translated to millions in the bank, and Jamal has become a youth broadcast sensation. He is accredited with giving several new stars, like Ed Sheeran, their starts on SB.TV. And I have to say that looking at Jamal's emergence on the scene gives me some deja vu shivers, as in so many ways, it's like a digital era remix of my roots with Student Magazine and Virgin Records. Go get 'em, Jamal. You are an inspiration to millions of young entrepreneurs. How governments can help. Seriously. Unfortunately, Jamal's amazing story is very much the exception to the rule. While support from schools and families is critical, governments need to contribute as well in supporting young entrepreneurs and future job creators who, as I did at age 16, decide that academic pursuits aren't really the best path for them. Determined to dig deeper into exactly these issues, in 2011, Virgin Media Pioneers, VMP, conducted an extensive survey of young entrepreneurs, and their responses confirmed the usual problems. Young people are still held back by a lack of support, a lack of practical training, and the often impossible task of sourcing startup capital. Drawing on these findings, and working with a number of youth issues experts and groups, VMP issued a comprehensive report calling for corporations to find tangible ways to support startups, such as freeing up unused office space and providing mentors who would volunteer their time to assist aspiring young entrepreneurs. At the same time, I suggested to the government that it should seriously reconsider the way it invests in young people. The argument was really very simple. Why should a university-bound student be able to borrow, in the UK, around £30,000 to get a degree in business, but then when he or she is ready to take their newfound entrepreneurial skills to market, struggle to raise a measly £5,000 or £10,000 to launch their shoestring startup? Or, in the event that halfway through their planned time at university, a student stumbles on a must-do eureka moment opportunity and wants to seize the moment, why shouldn't there be a way for them to parlay the balance of their student loan into a startup loan? I further boldly suggested that the British government could address this scenario and, in so doing, unlock huge economic benefits. The recommendation was for the existing student loans company, which administers tuition fees, be reinvented as a new youth investment company. Under the new broader-based business model, it would continue to administer student loans, but would also have the remit to make new or crossover loans available to young entrepreneurs on the same favourable terms. Remembering my own struggles to find funding after I dropped out of school, this ingeniously simple concept certainly resonated with me. As supportive as my parents were during those first years, it was an incredibly challenging hand-to-mouth time. And besides, even if your parents have the resources, no one really likes asking their family for handouts. But the government? Well, that's a very different thing. To everyone's delight, in 2012, behind the efforts of Lord Young, the government formed a new non-profit called the Startup Loans Company to provide financing to young businesses and appointed James Kahn as its chairman. The company has since built up a network of more than 50 delivery partners who are lending money to new businesses all across the UK. To date, more than 15,000 businesses have borrowed over £80 million, an impressive feat by any standard. Through our bank, Virgin Money, we took part in a pilot program last year and have now launched our own delivery partner, Virgin Startup, to help provide training and mentorship in addition to funding. Of course, this is not just an issue in Britain. Governments all around the world should be working to figure out ways to put more capital in the hands of entrepreneurs in order to drive economic growth, broaden the tax base, and create jobs. When one considers that in 2013, according to the UK government's private sector employment indicator, small businesses of 10 to 49 employees accounted for 99% of all UK private sector companies and 59% of all private sector employment, it certainly is an incredibly fertile field in which to plant some new entrepreneurial seed money. Femtrepreneurs. As tough as starting a business is for everyone, special attention should be paid to young female entrepreneurs who inexplicably still face many more barriers to credit, markets, and social networks than do their male counterparts. I say inexplicably because we know that women reinvest more of their earnings into the health and education of themselves and their families, which has a valuable multiplier effect from which we all stand to gain. Furthermore, according to the Boston Consulting Group, women make 70% of household purchasing decisions, and not just on children's clothing and groceries, but also the big ticket items like cars and vacations. So given that almost 50% of the workforce is now female, and they are making 70% of the buying decisions, what possible rationale or justification can there be for the comparative dearth of women in senior executive roles and boardrooms? According to the European Commission, in the largest EU companies, the ratio of female board members across member states averages only about 14%. The Italians are the worst, with only 6%, while the French do better with 22%. To try and redress, no pun intended, the balance, the EU is considering following Norway's lead. Back in 2003, the Norwegians set a minimum target of 40% for women on boards, and by 2008, that number was up to an admirable 44%. The UK government, meanwhile, has tamely recommended that British companies should have 25% female board participation by 2015. Don't hold your breath on this one. First of all, it's way too low a target, and secondly, it's going to take something a lot stronger than a polite nudge from the government to break the very British old boys' club mentality at board level. The focus on board gender ratios, though, is putting the cart before the horse. This is a step-by-step process, and before anyone can hope to increase the amount of female representation at board level, there first has to be a much higher ratio of women in senior executive roles. According to the 2013 Fortune 1000 list of CEOs, only 4.6%, that is, 46 are women, and that number has been virtually stagnant for a decade. I find that quite appalling, but hopefully the infamous glass ceiling is about to become a distant memory with the new generation of dynamic women leaders that are now running a lot of formerly very macho organizations, like General Motors. Mary Barra took over in January 2014, PepsiCo, IBM, Lockheed Martin, and General Dynamics. Others, like Sheryl Sandberg, the vociferous COO at Facebook, and Marissa Meyer at Yahoo, are also gaining momentum in the drive to make gender a non-issue in the workplace. At Virgin, we have our own powerhouse women leaders, such as Jane Ann Gardia at Virgin Money, Jean Owong at Virgin Unite, and Cecilia Vega, who has just joined us as CEO of Virgin Mobile in Mexico. But I'll be honest and admit, we too still have work to do. Corporations and active startups. Whatever the gender, one question I get asked frequently is, so what can established businesses do to help young entrepreneurs? One quick and easy option is to incorporate young entrepreneurs and their businesses into existing supply chains. On Virgin America flights, for example, our passengers are offered healthy snack foods made by passionate entrepreneurs, such as Crave Turkey Jerky, Holly Baking Company's Chocolate Chip Cookies, and Hail Mary Seasoned Nut Blend. All three of these companies were started independently by young entrepreneurs who, after discovering they couldn't find the food product that they wanted on the market, decided to go out and create it for themselves. A very familiar scenario in the Virgin story and the entrepreneur world in general. In South Africa, the township of Soweto is one of Johannesburg's poorest suburbs, and perhaps not surprisingly, it didn't have a single health and fitness club. As a result, when Virgin Active announced we were opening one there, it drew equal gasps of surprise and admiration from the local community. Better still, this was no cookie-cutter club, but was uniquely tailored to Soweto's particular needs. It features such things as a DJ booth and a boxing arena with commercial spaces for local entrepreneurs, including a hairdressing salon and even a car wash. In total, the club has created more than 100 much-needed permanent jobs. It is at the core of Virgin's DNA to support and celebrate innovation and the spirit of entrepreneurship. But in order to reach true scale, we need others to do the same. That means getting active and getting creative. Nodding in sage approval of other people's efforts or even the occasional donation of cash is fine, but without assertive action, it doesn't get it done. Mentoring from those who've been there, done that. When talking about the importance of mentoring, the American author and businessman Zig Ziglar couldn't have said it any better. A lot of people have gone further than they thought they could because someone else thought they could. Ask any successful businessman, and if they are honest about it, they will almost certainly admit to having benefited from the advice of a mentor at some point along the way. I have always been a huge believer in the inestimable value good mentoring can contribute to any nascent business. As a young man entering the mysterious and somewhat scary world of business for the first time, I was lucky enough to be taken under the wing of David Beavers, a friend of my parents. David was an accountant, and out of sheer kindness, and I suspect some desperate pleading by my mum and dad, he used to spend one evening a week trying to guide me through the basics of bookkeeping. It was hugely helpful, and he displayed amazing patience with my repeated requests of, can you run that one by me just one more time, please? I talk elsewhere about how much the late Sir Freddie Laker's mentoring did for me with Virgin Atlantic, and how greatly his down-to-earth wisdom accrued to my entire approach to business. The first step to finding a good mentor is, of course, coming to terms with the fact that you actually can benefit from having one. Understandably, there's a lot of ego, nervous energy, and parental pride involved, especially with one- or two-person startups, factors that tend to manifest themselves in a cocoon-like state of mind where, Only we get it, and nobody else can possibly help make this thing work. Trust me, they can, and they will. Going it alone is an admirable but foolhardy and highly flawed approach to taking on the world. Just look at the high flyers who have sought out mentors. Steve Jobs's variant of My Sir Freddy was former Intel manager Mike Markula. His investment of $80,000 in equity and $170,000 as a loan earned Markula a one-third share in Apple, but it was his role as what Jobs called the adult supervisor that was by far and away his greatest contribution to keeping the unruly Apple youngsters on track. At Google, Larry Page and Sergey Brin brought in a similar overseer in Eric Schmidt, formerly of Sun Microsystems and Novell, who was appointed CEO when they realized the company's explosive growth was outstripping their ability to manage it. Schmidt's greatest contribution was building the corporate infrastructure needed to maintain Google's frenetic growth. So please, take it from me. No matter how incredibly smart you think you are, or how brilliant, disruptive, or plain off the wall your new concept might be, every startup team needs at least one good mentor. Someone, somewhere, has already been through what you are convinced nobody else has ever confronted. Okay, so their version may have been analog rather than digital, but trust me, many of the business fundamentals are exactly the same. Building a new business takes more than technological skills and creative genius. It needs people. And if you're going to create a great culture as well as a great product, those people need tending to in a plethora of different ways. Rent a mentor. If you are going to be bold enough to go into business for yourself, then you should have no qualms about seeking out the dream mentor. If you have someone you admire that you think will understand your objectives, whether it's a friend of your family's, an old university professor, a local business person, or even a senior executive from a multinational company, then be bold and go for it. Phil Drolet at Entrepreneur.com suggested that an ideal mentor will have achieved what you want to achieve and be someone who you could see yourself going out for a drink with. Just be sure and offer to pick up the tab when you do. But seriously, if they are the right choice, the chances are they are going to be extremely busy too. So Drolet stressed the necessity to respect a mentor's time by following up with well-crafted and concise emails and not expecting them to do all the work. Most people, as Sir Freddy was with me, are flattered when a young, enthusiastic entrepreneur comes seeking the wisdom of their advice and counsel. The worst that can happen is that they fail to respond or just say no, which falls into the category of nothing ventured, nothing gained. One that every good young entrepreneur will quickly become very familiar with. In many ways, starting a company is akin to having your first baby. It's an exciting and slightly terrifying experience. When the first child coughs or cries too long, your natural instinct is that something's terribly wrong and you want to take them to the doctor. With the second child, you'll say, "Don't worry, it's only a cough," and by the third, it's already a case of, "Darling, did you hear something just then?" The right mentor will probably have raised a bunch of infant ventures and be able to smooth your way through the teething troubles that every young company experiences. They will help you and your team members navigate your way through those seemingly overwhelming and often daily early-stage crises and later, all being well, still be there to coach you through the equally daunting process of an orderly, as opposed to runaway train, expansion process. Later, if you have successfully negotiated the startup years and perhaps had someone mentor you along the way, are you ready to pay some of it back by assisting local social entrepreneurs? If so, take a look at your own business or the company you work for. Do you and your team have the skills and the energy that would be valuable when helping others? If so, could you perhaps find new partners and take on a new sector? Alternatively, can you carve out some time to invest in helping a non-profit tackle its tough first few years? I can assure you, it will be time extremely well spent, and whatever time and energy you invest will come back to you in what I have certainly found to always be true win-win experiences. The leaders of the future have got a lot going for them, but are always going to need all the help they can get from the elder statesmen who have been there and done that. When it comes to finding the right mentors, I can think of no better example than what we have achieved with all of our mentor/partners at Virgin Unite over the last decade. Virgin Unite is a foundation that, alongside all kinds of amazing partners, brings together the best of entrepreneurial spirit with ideas that help to tackle some of the tougher social and environmental challenges around the world. We've worked with our partners to create leadership collaborations like the Elders, the Carbon War Room, and the B Team. We've also had the privilege of working with some inspirational young entrepreneurs through the Branson Centers for Entrepreneurship and a global mentorship platform that helps connect successful entrepreneurs with those just starting out. We created Virgin Unite based on the principle that business can and must be a force for good. So much of our work has also been leveraging the wonderful people and assets we have in our family of businesses to change business for good. Most importantly, as the name Unite suggests, we always seek out the best local or multinational partners. No matter how big you are, going it alone is seldom, if ever, a viable option. And as we have found, particularly with the elders, a good mentor can be an amazingly telling mirror and can also open a lot of doors that previously looked impenetrable.